Young girl, you were not born only to cook. Your youth is not to be ruined. You were not born a victim, were not born as an instrument for a man's enjoyment. Start your new life, stride along your path, and if a sad song is in your heart, keep in your ear an anthem of liberation. If chains enslave you, break them down, just as they broke down the Berlin Wall. We, your true brothers, swear. We, your obedient sons, swear that no one can attack or insult you, no one dishearten you or stop you on your way. Because we too can be brave enough to break the chains that enslave us, we too will think afresh. Those words were written by a young father-to-be in 1997 as he waited for his daughter to be born in a little village in the Swat Valley of Pakistan. When that daughter was born, he and his wife named her Malala. The father who wrote those words ran a girls' school in the village until the Taliban came and, among other things, decreed that girls were not worthy of being educated. And so at the age of 11, she said goodbye to her schoolmates. And yet she spoke out and returned to school. And so it was in October 2015 that a gunman entered her school bus, asked very simply, "Where is Malala?" and then shot her. 10 days later, she woke up in a hospital here in the UK in Birmingham, where the doctors and nurses told her about the attack and that people across the world were praying for her. With her father's help, she founded the Malala Trust and Fund, which has a very simple aim: to ensure that every girl has the opportunity to strive for the future of her choice. She was recognized for this work in December 2014 with the award of the Nobel Peace Prize, when she became the youngest ever Nobel laureate. A teenage girl whose life was turned upside down. All the dreams and hopes she may have had changed in a moment. And of course, to my mind, I think of Mary, another teenage girl separated by 2,000 years, but by very little in terms of human reality. Her life, her dreams, her plans for the future turned upside down, not by a gunman, but by an angelic visitor, but with news nonetheless that threatened her life. Whether 2,000 years ago, in the valleys of Pakistan, in the cities of Syria, in the boardrooms of the West, in the homes of our friends, family, and neighbors, so much rage seems ready to pour forth. And in choosing to talk about gender inequality as a starting point for my thinking this evening, you may well ask, is this appropriate or even wise? If the M&S window displays cannot get this one right, if the BBC's own Christmas advert draws such wrath, what chance for a male, pale, and very possibly stale vicar can there be? It really is a moment here before you where talking about Brexit would seem like an easy option. Or what about the other great things that trouble our world? Climate change, racism, mental health, almost anything else. But two particular reasons for beginning here. One is simply because between Mary and Malala lie 2,000 years of historic oppression and injustice and disempowerment of women. And secondly, because that reality is as good a lens as any to peer into the fractures in the human reality. Because whether it is people of one color against people of another, or whether it is people of one gender against people of another, these fights tear our very humanity apart. And you may well ask the question, well, is not the church complicit in this injustice, this disempowerment? And the simple answer is, yes, it is. Historically, the church has been on the wrong side on too many occasions. And that reality for me as a vicar means two things. Firstly, it is incredibly hard to speak the words I'm speaking, and yet it is impossible not to speak them. Because that record of complicity needs to be set right. Well, you might say, in our second reading from Genesis 3, did we not hear those words from God himself about the war between the sexes, the hostility, the tension, the fracture that would exist between men and women because of our wrong and broken choices? Let us beware mistaking God's descriptive words for either desire or design. So often God describes human reality that he neither desires nor has designed. And if we look back to the Hebrew origins of our human condition, the book called Genesis, from which we get the words genes and genealogy, we see a very different desire and a very different design. Yes, there was a moment in that story of creation when God gave man alone charge of the earth. And then God said very simply, this is not a good idea. I thought that would get a better response. God realized that to be fully human, to do the primary work of what it is to be human, which according to the Bible is to bear upon our planet his image, the work not just of man, not just of woman, but of men and women as humankind, to reflect the nature of a generous, compassionate, gracious God to the world. I do believe I stand in front of and speak to a room full of people who want to live a better story, who want to imagine a better future, who want to listen to the truth and pain of women, and yet also want to listen to the truth and pain that comes when accusation is as good as a conviction, and where lives can be destroyed by a misspoken or intentional word. I believe I speak to people who long to celebrate difference and know that when we deny difference, we end up with tokenism. Who long to celebrate mutuality between the genders and recognize that when we depart from mutuality, we end up objectifying and degrading. And I believe that that is not simply our desire, but it is God's design. What he wove into the fabric of being human, human being at the beginning. In Genesis 16, there's a story that arises out of the oppression of women by men. The man is Abraham. You may be familiar with the story, you may be not, but Abraham and his wife are getting on in years. They have been promised that through them, their biological offspring, a great nation will arise to bless the earth. But the clock is tick-tock ticking. All hope is fading. And as was the custom in those days, when a couple could not conceive, a wife would send her slave girl to the husband and have a child by her. In this case, the slave girl was called Hagar. She was an Egyptian. She was part of Abraham's property that he had acquired when he and his family were in Egypt. And lo and behold, she has a child. And Abraham's wife despises and ill-treats her. And when the child is born, she runs into the desert. Now, this is the point. The first appearance in Scripture of the angel of the Lord, which is the Hebrew writer's way of speaking about God revealing himself directly to humankind, the first occasion that that happens is not to a patriarch, a great father, the big man, but to this Hagar. This Egyptian slave. This woman who back in Egypt would have been invisible to the pharaohs, invisible to the gods of Egypt. And as God reveals himself to her and speaks words of comfort and promise and blessing, she names him the God who sees me. It may feel unlikely, but if you are a woman who feels unseen, disempowered, unjustly treated, denied opportunity and freedom, the Christmas story speaks of a God who sees you. One final little Bible story. Again, you may or may not be aware of it. This is in the life, the adult life, of the baby boy born to Mary, whose birth we celebrate at this time of year. He's in a town. And as he's teaching the crowds, some religious bigwigs drag in a woman. And they accuse her of being caught in adultery. They fling her down at his feet and they ask him whether she should be stoned. It's a horrific passage. We know from contemporary accounts that although stoning was almost unheard of in the cities, it was still practiced in the countryside. It's a reminder of the threat to Mary's own life when she was faithful and obedient to God's word and put herself in the position of the wagging fingers and the accusation. And you know, when I read this passage, I do wonder whether when Jesus pauses, he is remembering stories his own mother told him of the times when fingers pointed at her, when she heard cries of condemnation. What Jesus does with this woman is sit beside her in the dust. He rebukes those who would condemn. And he offers her an invitation into new life. Malala's father gave the poem he wrote for his unborn daughter the title, "I Promise." And he ends with a vow We men too, can be brave enough to break the chains that enslave us. We too will think afresh. It is a wonderful vow. But like many vows, yours and mine, is it not the simple truth that we find them so hard to keep? You look at a man who will do anything for a perfect body, except diet and exercise. And our good intentions and our deepest vows often come to so little. And that is the distinctive about the Christian message, the distinctive about the Christmas message, the distinctive about this baby of this mother. That rather than encouraging us simply to make our vows and do our best, good as that may be, ultimately he is here to help us where we cannot help ourselves. In our world full of rage, in our knee-jerk desire for there to be somebody to blame, somebody to punish, Jesus stands before us again and again and says, pour your rage upon me. Punish me. Nail me. And just as that woman that he met in the dust of an ancient street, if we come to him, we will find the same response, not of condemnation, but of grace and an invitation to new life. And it may be that that little snapshot from the adult life of Jesus says something to each one of us here, not simply about what is wrong with humanity in general, but specifically what is wrong inside me. And if that is you tonight, then the Christian journey begins as we say sorry.
Mary, I'm sorry for all that we've done, for the ways we've betrayed the ways of the Son. Mary, forgive us. Hail Mary of grace. He taught us the cross, and we nailed him in place. Mary, you wound him, but suffered the shame of fingers that pointed, appointing their blame. Unmarried and pregnant, what had she done? And what could become of an ill-begot son? But angels did herald, while Herod did rage, at the birth of this child who would birth a new age of life over death, and of love over law, and blessed the meek, and blessed the poor, and bless those who mourn, and hearts that are pure, the certain of faith, and those that aren't sure. And blessed the children, and right over might. A world revolution, and yet not quite. Because he came to bring peace, but still we chose war. To free the oppressed, but we've oppressed more. To humble the rich, we've put them on thrones. To rush, not to judge, we've thrown the first stones. He mothered his tribe, we gas them like flies. Welcome the outcast, yet we still despise. Told us we're equal. Perhaps, one or two. Honored all women. Now it's hashtag me too. And yet, every Christmas, we're back at this birth. The carpenter's lad who had crafted the earth. We're there in the stable with curious kings and the gentlest rustle of angelic wings. We shuffle with shepherds, not sure what we see in the dung and the feed. Is this majesty? And Mary, you cradle our hope to your breast, the one who will die while we will be blessed. Jesus, I'm sorry for all that I've done, for the ways I've betrayed the ways of the Son. And Jesus, each Christmas, looks into my face and says, I forgive you. Start over with grace. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all might believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth.